We're on the record.
Good afternoon. Today is June 3rd, 2024. It's approximately 2 p.m. And this is hearings office case number 424-0008, also known as land use 2302-8012. Excuse me, 24014054, CUAD. I am Nancy Hoffman, the hearings officer for today's hearing. We are holding this hearing via the Zoom teleconference platform, and this is being recorded by audio only. This is the initial public hearing for a Type 3 land use case, and the appellant is requesting approval of removal of a prior addition to the rear of the St. John's Library and construction of an addition in its place. And the proposal includes a new detached covered accessory building on the site. As hearings officer, I am a neutral decision maker. I have no bias or personal interest in the outcome of this case. And I've had no ex parte communication, i.e. communication outside the hearing room, with any interested person about the substance of the case. Before we begin, I have some preliminary announcements that describe how the hearing today will be conducted, and they are required by state law and the zoning code. They are the following: the focus of today's hearing, the record of today's hearing, the guidelines for giving testimony today, and how the hearing will proceed. The focus of the hearing is whether, with its proposed modifications, the applicant's proposal to allow changes described previously, which might not otherwise be allowed, meet the planned development approval criteria under the code. The Bureau of Development Services staff report and recommendation identifies and discusses the applicable approval criteria. Staff will also identify the approval criteria in their presentation in just a few minutes. The applicant has the burden of proof to establish that the proposal meets each element of the approval criteria. The following items are considered the record of the hearing: the audio recording, which will be available on the hearings office's website after two business days, and evidence submitted into the record. It's important to submit all evidence to the hearings officer, which, since we're remote, would be via the hearings office clerk. If there is an appeal to the proposal, City Council will not accept additional evidence. When making my decision, I will consider the written and oral evidence submitted into the record, which includes oral and written testimony given at the hearing, and documents in the record include BDS's staff report, recommendations, and all exhibits listed in it, written comments submitted before the close of the record, BDS planner's file and its PowerPoint presentation at this hearing, both of which will be submitted into the record at the end of the hearing. The record will close at the end of the hearing unless one of the following three things happens. The applicant asks for additional time to submit final written argument, or a person asks that the record be kept open, and anyone who wants the record to be kept open should say so at the end of their oral testimony that is submitted today. If such a request is made, the record will be held open a minimum of 7 days. Lastly, if anyone requests a continuance of the hearing, and anyone may ask for a continuance if new information is submitted in support of the application. As far as submitting documents into the record, if you have a document that you want put into the record, you must give it to the clerk during your testimony or before the close of the hearing. The record may not remain open at the end of the hearing today, so since we are remote, submitting it means emailing it to the clerk so she can mark it and add it to the record as an exhibit. The clerk's email address is hearings office clerks, that's plural, all one word, at portlandoregon.gov, and I'll ask the clerk to put that into the Zoom chat. If the record closes at the end of today's hearing, I will only accept a copy of the staff's PowerPoint presentation and the planner's file at the end of the hearing. If you're giving testimony today, please identify yourself. Give your full name, spelling your last name, and state your email address or other mailing address that you would like your order sent to. If representing somebody else other than yourself, please state who you are representing. Also, if you give testimony and then later come back to give additional testimony, please state your last name again so the recording will identify who is speaking. A copy of my decision will be sent to anybody who submits testimony and any others who give their name and address to the clerk after the hearing. Your testimony must be directed toward applicable approval criteria or other criteria in a plan or land use regulation that you believe applies. And it's very important that you raise any issues concerning the land use application and BDS's report and recommendation before the end, well, at this hearing or before the record closes. If you do not, you cannot later use the issue as a basis for appeal. Also, you must raise the issue clearly and specifically enough to allow the hearings officer and parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. And I will ask people, as you, I see everybody has done, to please mute yourself if you're not talking, so that the recording will be clear. I should say, when you're not testifying, you can talk to other people if you're muted. Here's the procedure that we will use today. The BDS planner will give their PowerPoint presentation. Then we'll go to the applicant's presentation. Most important is whether you oppose or agree with BDS's report and recommendations. Then we'll go to public testimony in support of the applicant's proposal. Then public testimony in opposition to the application, if any, and then BDS's rebuttal or response. If new information arises, everyone will have a chance to respond. And then we'll have the applicant's closing statement. I may ask some questions along the way, and my written decision will be issued within 17 days after the record closes. My written decision is appealable to City Council. Those are the end of my opening remarks, and so now we'll go to Mr. Kienholz for BDS's PowerPoint presentation. And I just want to tell everybody that I am feeling a little bit handicapped right now. My second monitor is not working, so it may go a little bit slower than normal. Okay, please go ahead.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And for the record, actually, I'm getting some feedback. My name is Don Kienholz. I'm a senior planner with the Bureau of Development Services, and I'm the staff planner who processed and reviewed this application, which, as you know, is case number LU24-01-4054-CUAD. Let's see here. Do I have control to share? Share screen, yes. Okay. We usually use Teams, so this is a little bit different here, but let me know. Hopefully you can see this.
I can.
Okay, great. And it takes a little while for it to kick in. Okay. So before I get into the meat and bones of the presentation, I want to go over some important dates that are important to both our code requirements and the statutory requirements. The first is that the application was submitted on February 15th of this year. The applicant did submit a full 245-day extension to the statutory clock. So we now have, instead of a 120-day clock, we have a 365-day clock. And that was submitted, like I said, on February 15th at the same time as the application. What that means is, and I just want to double check on this, hearings officer, this, because they submitted this and they submitted it within the first 21 days of the application, they are entitled to a de novo hearing before City Council should it be appealed. So that's the requirement that we have. And I thought I heard in the opening that it was not. So I just want to make sure to let you know that they did submit this extension and request for an evidentiary appeal, should there be one. The application was deemed complete.
Oh, my understanding is that this is fully appealable to City Council.
Yes, it is, but it can be denied. Oh, new information can be provided.
Okay. I am going to take your word for that right now, and if I find something different, I will let the parties know.
Okay, thank you. The application was deemed complete on March 27th, so our statutory clock expires on February 27th of 2025. The applicant posted signs on May 2nd of this year and also provided me with the affidavit describing that. And then the public notice was sent off to the neighboring properties within 400 feet in the identified associations and neighborhood groups on May 14th of 2024. So we've satisfied all of the code requirements for a Type 3 land use review. As noted in the introduction, the applicant's request is for approval of a conditional use review to remove an 800 square foot component of the library on the rear and replace that with a approximately 2,950 square foot addition, which brings us to a net increase of about 2,100 square feet to the building, as well as a detached accessory structure that would be used for both bike storage as well as trash in the recycling area. Because this is more than a 2,000 square foot addition to an existing conditional use, this is required to go through this Type 3 land use review process. As designed, the proposal requires six adjustments, which I've identified here, and I'll go into more depth in the presentation. Bear with me as I read these here. The first is to reduce the required side building setback for the addition, which is to the north property line, from 10 feet to 8 feet. Reduce the required rear building setback for the addition from 10 feet to 5 feet. Reduce the required rear building setback for the detached accessory structure from 10 feet to 5 feet. And then reduce the required L3 landscaping buffer that's required between an institutional use and the property that is in the residential zone. It's already being reduced from 10 feet to 8 feet as part of this request, but there's supposed to be a L3 landscape buffer within there as well, so that's being reduced from 10 feet to 8 feet as well. Increase the maximum building setback from a street in the pedestrian district to the for the proposed addition from 20 feet, that's the maximum required building setback, up to 116 feet. And then lastly, allow vehicle area between a building and the street within a pedestrian district. To start, here's the zoning map of the property. It's outlined in red. It is, I wouldn't say, it's within, clearly within the middle of the St. John's neighborhood. North Lombard Street is one of the main streets there. It's a commercial district, so you can see it identified right there on North Charleston Street, or excuse me, it's Charleston Avenue. And to give some context of where we're looking, in the lower right-hand corner is the city of Portland, with showing the subject site in a star. This is in the extreme northwest portion of the city. And then looking at the vicinity map again, you can see where the property is in relation to the St. John's neighborhood. Across the street is the historic James John Elementary School, and then to the north, there's also a Montessori school there. So the approval criteria for conditional use review are found in 33.815.105. The first criterion, A, looks at how the proposal will impact the character and appearance and function of the residential area. So the criteria does not want us to significantly lessen the character of the residential area. And this looks at a few different things. It looks at the number, size, location of other uses that are not in household living category within that residential area. And it looks at the intensity and scale of the proposed use and that of the existing household living uses in that vicinity. So the first thing we have to do is identify what is the area. Generally speaking, we use 600 feet. The 600 feet comes from the 400 feet that we notice, that we send the notice out, and then we add on an additional 200 feet from that just to give us a more conservative base to ensure that we're not adversely affecting the residential area. Now, the subject site is very unique in that how it sits in the St. John's neighborhood. As you can see from the vicinity map that I've identified here, you've got the blue outline, which would be 600 feet from all the property lines of the library. Within that, I've identified the area that we're going to be providing the evaluation for. The reason that this is slightly smaller is that there are some hard boundaries that show up naturally with this review. And those are these are streets that are to the north, North Central Street, North Oswego Avenue to the east, North Ivanhoe Street to the south, and North Levitt Avenue to the west. Within that area, you'll see that all properties that are to the south and then to the west of the site are zoned commercial mixed use. So those are not subject to the evaluation because what we're trying to protect is the residential area. So as you can see from this insert as well, is that the residential zones that we see are RM2 and RM1. Now immediately across the street to the west, like I've noted before, is an elementary school, which is not a household living use. Directly to the north is a Montessori school. North of that is another institutional use. And then to the northwest, we have a religious institutional use. So the only area that contains household living uses in the residential zones is going to be in the northwest portion of the property, or of the area that's zoned RM1D. So what we have to evaluate is this addition, is this conditional use going to significantly detract or lessen the character and impact of the residential area? In this case, we have an existing library on site. It's been there since the early 1900s. It's a historic structure and it's an institution that is really central to the St. John's neighborhood. The proposal does not change the number of non-household living uses in this vicinity. It's only adding to an existing one. So there is no change and there's no difference in the ratio of the household living uses. As I noted earlier, this area is unique because it's not just one non-household living use that's in this area, but there's actually quite a few. Within the residential area that is zoned RM2, there's not a single household living use. Again, institutional uses such as religious institutions, schools. There's a couple of even non-conforming uses that are retail sales and service, such as a social club that's up there on the north of North Central Street. So staff found that this criterion was met because we aren't changing the number of non-household living uses. It's going to remain the same. The functionality and the operational impact or changes, the functionality and the operations of the library are not changing, so there will be no net change or impact to the character of the area. The second approval criterion deals with physical compatibility. First, are there any scenic resources here? We have two types. We have scenic corridors and scenic views, and none of those are mapped within the vicinity. The second criterion is whether the proposal will be compatible with the adjacent residential development based on characteristics such as site size, building scale and style, setbacks, tree preservation, and landscaping, or if there are any impacts, how are those mitigated? So, as noted, there's no city-designated scenic resources in the area. There's also no household living uses that are adjacent to the site, just schools. There's a Montessori school and there's the elementary school. So the area that we're really concerned about in the northwest is approximately 150 feet away from the closest point of the property line. The proposed development meets the development standards such as maximum height, maximum building coverage. It's below the maximum floor area ratio, and it's actually adding landscaping. So it is addressing the elements of number two there, and it's not changing the character of the area. So staff determined that it's physically compatible with the adjacent uses, and because it's so far from the household living uses, that there's not going to be any negative impact of that. So it is physically compatible. And we also identified that there's no mitigation necessary based upon the uniqueness of the site being adjacent to the commercial zones and having institutional uses adjacent to it. Criterion C is an important one. This has to do with livability. It states, the proposal will not have a significant adverse impact on the livability of nearby residentially zoned lands due to noise, glare from lights, late night operations, odors, and litter, and privacy and safety issues. Again, the proposal is for an existing library, so nothing new is coming in. The changes are not going to extend the capture area of the library. It's going to be the same capture area, but the additional spaces to allow the library and the customers to have more room basically to move and to store their books and other materials within the library. So it's not going to change the functionality or the operationalness of the use itself. The adjacent residentially zoned properties are, again, the south and to the east are commercial, to the west and to the north, while they are residentially zoned, they are non-household living uses, and that's their schools, and there's no anticipation that those will be changing anytime soon. So the area of concern, again, is more than 150 feet from the property line, and that is the RM1 zone in the northwest. Because this is not changing what's already on the site, there's not going to be any changes to the noise of late night operations, no anticipated odors or litters. There will be new lights that will be installed. The parking lot's being slightly changed, changed in the configuration. The new portions of the library will have lights on them. The applicant has stated that those will be dark sky compliant to ensure that there's no light pollution and that will not present glare to the adjacent residential properties. So we've added the condition of approval, ensuring that that takes place. And again, finally, there's no changes to the use, functionality, or operations, which means that there are no privacy or safety issues to the schools that are adjacent to the library. Criterion D addresses the public services, and we want to make sure that whatever we're doing to a site or whatever we're approving isn't going to negatively impact the transportation system or the other public services that are on site. In this case, the first two criteria under public services are geared towards the Portland Bureau of Transportation. So the applicant submitted a transportation impact study that was authorized by a registered professional engineer. The Portland Bureau of Transportation, who is our partner, evaluated both the methodologies and analysis of that. They concurred with the conclusions of the engineers that there will be no adverse impacts to the transportation system. Effectively, the intersections around this particular library, they're already operating at acceptable level of service because there's no anticipated additional trips being generated. That's going to remain the same. There's still good connectivity for multiple modes of moving around. And so the Portland Bureau of Transportation found that the criteria were satisfied and they have no objections to this proposal. So we concur with that. The Bureau of Development Services concurs with that, that this meets the approval criteria. The third tier of this criterion is that the Water Bureau, Police Bureau, and Fire Bureau find that the site is capable, or that they are capable of serving the site with the proposed services that they do. They all provided written comments that they have no objection that they have adequate service. The Bureau of Environmental Services, the criterion is a little bit different in that they have to deem what is there or what will be there is acceptable to them. So they evaluated the stormwater system that's on site as well as the sewer system or the sanitary system. They also looked at drainage to make sure that that's adequate. And as proposed, they have no issues with that. And so they have deemed that the proposal is acceptable to them. So we have recommended approval. And we do concur with that. Lastly, the last conditional use approval criterion has to do with the area plans. And any proposal needs to be consistent with the area plans that have been adopted by City Council and the policies or objectives that are found within them. So when the applicant submitted their application, they included in a narrative that identified a number of different policies within that plan that appear to be applicable to this and are relevant to what's being proposed. Staff looked at those. We agreed with that, and so we found that this criterion was also satisfied. Now, those few policies that were identified really center on maintaining a sense of place, maintaining a small town feel, because this St. John's used to be its own city, and so it has its own main street and has a small town feel, preserves the history and identity of the neighborhood, which this library has been associated with St. John's since, you know, I think it's 1917, and it's preserving the historical structure and allowing that to continue by putting the addition onto the rear. And then also requires preserving the environment and enhancing the community. So staff found that all those objectives and policies within the St. John's Lombard Neighborhood Plan are consistent with what's being proposed, and so we found that to be approvable. Next, we move on to the adjustments that are being proposed. And again, there's six different adjustments. So the approval criteria for adjustments are found in 33.805.040, specifically A through F. There's an additional three that can be addressed, but that's under a hardship pathway, so the applicant chose to address A through F. And of those six approval criteria, only three are applicable in this case, and that's A, B, and C, so I'll be going through those individually as well. The first criterion, A, is that granting the adjustment will equally or better meet the purpose of the regulation to be modified. So each development standard within our zoning code has a purpose. And so any modification to that needs to equally meet the purpose. And so in some cases, you may request a reduction in something, but you're adding something else elsewhere on the site, and so it equally meets that purpose. So we're going to do an evaluation of each of the adjustments. Now, I've broken these up because there are six. Four of them are associated with the addition. Two of them are associated with the accessory building. So I'm going to go through them in this grouping. Adjustments 1, 2, and 4 that were identified in the staff report in the proposal are these. To reduce the required side building setback from the north lot line from 10 feet to 8, and that's represented in blue on this insert. Then reduce the required rear building setback from 10 feet to 5 feet, and that's shown as green on this. And then number 4, reduce the required L3 landscape buffer that's required between an institutional use and a residential zone from 10 feet to 8 feet, which would match the reduction in the building setback from 10 feet to 8 feet. So that area that would apply to is shown in red here. In the multi-dwelling zone, there are development standards, base zone development standards. Institutional uses have their own development standards within that subsection. So the purpose, or the institutional development standards and the purpose for those are found in 33.120.275A. And this is for all the development standards that relate to an institutional use. And that it breaks down to this. The purpose is to maintain compatibility with and limit the negative impacts on surrounding residential areas. So the area of concern that we're really focusing on, as described before, is what I've shown here as green. That's in the northwest portion of the identified area. And this is zoned RM1, and this is where all the household living use in the area is located. Impacts, or what could be negative impacts, those have already been identified under the conditional use approval criteria, and these generally include impacts of traffic, parking, noise, late night activities, in some cases odor and litter, but also privacy and livability, or privacy and safety. So as discussed earlier, those have been evaluated. PVOT evaluated the potential traffic impacts and found that there's not going to be any negative impacts from this addition to an existing use. Staff evaluated the livability and the safety and privacy of nearby residential zones, as well as specifically household living uses, because that's where the people are living, and found that there was no negative impact there. And looking specifically at the landscaping adjustment, the purpose for what that would be, reducing the landscaping is only a 20% reduction from 10 feet to 8, and that's next to a property that has a school use with its own residential or with its own institutional buffer zone. So we got two institutional uses with their buffers up against each other. So there's not going to be any impact to a household living use in the residential zones. And I'm sorry that this kind of jumps around, but this is adjustment number 5. The reason that we're skipping to number 5 is because this is also related to the addition to the existing library. And that is to increase the maximum building setback from 20 feet all the way up to 116 feet. That has a different purpose statement, which is why I broke this out as well. And that purpose statement is, the setback requirements along transit streets create an environment that is inviting to pedestrians and transit users. Excuse me. In this case, the area of the addition that's being subject to the standard is a 15-foot swath, as I've identified here on blue. So that's section that's not immediately behind the library. So technically, that's supposed to be 20 feet from the front property line, but obviously it can't be because it's part of the addition that's going on the rear. Approval of this particular adjustment does one major thing, and that is that it preserves the historic library on site. If we were to meet the standard, if the library district were to meet the standard, they would have to demolish the existing historic library, which is an institution in the neighborhood, or conversely, they would have to build the addition in front of the library, which then would block the view of the historic element from the street, which would be a problem for the community and isn't really, is not what the standard is looking to address. The existing library has a very grand main entrance, complete with columns and an extra wide sidewalk. So that's clearly the focal point on the site. The large grandness of that main entrance is what draws people in, draws the eye, and that's what's going to connect to the pedestrians and any transit users, is that. Since we are adding onto the rear of the property, it's ancillary to the primary function and the primary structure, which is the historic library. So it's so far back that there's not going to be a relationship seen from anyone on the street. They're going to be focused right on the historic library, and that's where they're going to end up going. And so we believe that this meets the purpose, or allowing the increase in the setback meets that purpose. Jumping now to the accessory building, which is in the lower right-hand corner of the site. This is the southeast of the property. The request is to reduce the rear building setback for the detached covered accessory building from 10 feet to 5 feet, as identified in the red there. The purpose, again, for this is just like the institutional standards of the other setbacks, and that's to maintain the compatibility with and limit the negative impacts on the surrounding residential areas. In the case of the accessory structure, it's in the far southeast corner. The two closest property lines are the adjacent zones are commercial mixed use too. So there's no nearby residential area to this particular building. The setback to the south is satisfied at 10 feet, so that's not subject to the standard. And then to the east, it's only going down to 5 feet, and again, that's to a commercial zone. The closest residential property is 100 feet to the north, and again, that is an institutional use with that Montessori school. So we found that this standard was equally met by reducing that setback from 10 feet to 5 feet. The last adjustment sought is to allow vehicle area between a building and the street in the pedestrian district, and this is for the accessory structure as shown here in yellow. The property has an existing parking lot. It's used by both their property and the property to the south. 30 feet of the parking lot is on their property, and approximately 30 feet is on the adjacent property to the south. So of the width of the property, which is a total of 130 feet, 30 feet of it is vehicle area, and it's existing. And in this particular case, the inclusion of the accessory structure is removing two parking spaces. So the overall vehicle area is being reduced. There's additional landscaping that is being placed on site. So it's meeting a lot of these purpose statements. Next, it is an accessory structure. So it's not the primary purpose of the site. It does have a pedestrian connection to the existing sidewalk system that's on site, and that does lead to the street up front. But again, this is an accessory building, not the primary entrance. It's not the main entrance of the site. This will store trash and recycling, so employees will be using this, and there is bike parking, but that's an ancillary use that is secondary to the main library on site. The purpose statement for this particular standard is found in 33.266.130A, and that is to provide pedestrian access that's protected from auto traffic. So in this case, like I said, there will be a curb and additional landscaping that will separate the vehicle area from the accessory building. It limits the prominence of vehicle areas along the street frontage. And like I said, this is a 30-foot segment, and the overall vehicle area is being reduced. And it creates a sense of enclosure and transit pedestrian street frontages. This is enclosed by the curb that will block it from the vehicle area. And then lastly, limit the size of paved parking area and the type of paving material allowed in order to limit increases in temperature associated with asphalt and reduce impacts from urban heat island effects. Again, they're removing two paved parking spaces and they're replacing that with new ground cover and vegetation. So that will help reduce the urban heat island effect. And actually, I just stated all those findings right there, so I'm just going to go ahead and move on. The next adjustment approval criteria is B, and that is if in a residential zone, which this is, it's in the RM2 zone, the proposal will not significantly detract from the livability or appearance of the residential area. This is nearly identical to the conditional use approval criteria that we've already addressed in 33.815.105A and C. That standard was found to be met, excuse me, and staff finds that this standard is also met. The area of concern that we're looking at and trying to protect is over 150 feet from the closest point of the property line. The rear of the property is actually further than that from those household living uses. And the adjacent properties are non-household, are in either non-household living uses, the two schools, or it's CM2. So staff found that this criterion was also met. Criterion C is that if more than one adjustment is being requested, the cumulative effect of those adjustments results in a project which is still consistent with the overall purpose of the zone. There are six adjustments being sought, and the majority of those are addressing setback issues. In order to properly evaluate this, we have to look at what's the purpose of the multi-dwelling zones itself, which is in 33.120.010A. And after evaluating that, staff found that the adjustments do not increase the bulk on site as viewed from the street. They actually modify setbacks to allow the addition and accessory structure while still preserving that historical structure that's unique to St. John's and is important to the community. And it leaves it as the prominent feature on site. The modified setbacks are to properties in a school use to the north or commercially used to the east. That's the reduction in the setbacks. Neither property has household living and therefore will not be adversely impacted by the proposal. The proposal meets the height, building coverage, floor area limitations of the RM2 zone while still keeping the historic library intact and preserved. The proposal reduces the amount of vehicle area on site in order to reduce the heat island effect. It also increases the landscaping, which provides for additional filtration on site. And then lastly, as staff found in the conditional use approval criteria, the proposal will be consistent with the nearby residential area and fit the aesthetic and residential character of the neighborhood. And again, a big piece of that is that we are preserving the historic school that is, or excuse me, the historic library that's on site. So based on that, staff recommends approval to the hearings officer with the conditions of approval seen here. The first condition of approval is our stock language that anytime they submit for building permits, they'll have the case number, and that's to help ensure that whatever is being submitted is consistent with this approval. And then the last one is that any new exterior lights must be dark sky international compliant, and that's to ensure that the glare is reduced and was limited and reduced. Based on that, we have recommended approval. So if you have any questions specific to me, I'm happy to answer those as best as I can. Otherwise, that's the conclusion of my presentation. Thanks.
Thank you. I do not have any questions. Thank you for that complete presentation. And now we'll go to the applicant. And again, the most important is whether you oppose or agree with BDS's report and recommendations.
Hi, I'm Debbie Cleek. I'm the land use planner on the project, and my last name is spelled C-L-E-E-K, and my email address is cleek@bookandgroup.com. And we just wanted to thank staff for their very thorough review and report, and we do agree with their recommendation and their conditions of approval. And we have a very short presentation from the Multnomah County Library staff to talk a little bit about the project in general.
Thank you. And who would like to begin that presentation?
Just to confirm, Debbie, is that for me, Katie O'Dell, to start off? Okay, just wanted to double check. Hi, I'm Katie O'Dell, last name O'Dell. I'm the deputy director of the Library Capital Bond Program. I've prepared a written testimony to read to you and to share some basic information about both the project and then the bond that it's a part of. I'm here today to formally request your approval for the proposed conditional use of the St. John's Library to expand its facilities and complete the work voters approved in 2020. It's important to note that this project is part of an overall facilities framework based on equity and access to Multnomah County residents, and not only increases square footage, but also significantly enhances the quality of services provided to the community. The expanded library will offer a wide range of new programs, features, and services that were not feasible in the previous building. As you might imagine, librarians are not just fond of, but also de facto caretakers to classic Carnegie Library buildings. They are part of an important time in history when one of the wealthiest of Americans gave a tremendously generous gift in expanding access to shared resources across our country. They were also designed a century before the internet or Wi-Fi came into public access. And part of our work as a library is keeping our assets updated and meeting the current needs of our community. We are proud to be both caretakers of history and fighters for expanded access to free public space and resources. Here are some key points to consider regarding the proposed expansion. First, we'll be creating a general purpose lobby and vestibule. The new building will feature a spacious and welcoming lobby and vestibule at the main entrance, designed to efficiently serve visitors and create a positive first impression. We also are going to have the addition of flexible meeting rooms. Several flexible meeting rooms of various sizes will be added to accommodate a diverse range of public uses, including community gatherings, workshops, study groups, and more. The library will now have an after-hours entrance, allowing access to one of the large flexible meeting rooms, as well as a restroom, for the convenience of the community outside of regular library hours. We will have new dedicated areas for teens and children. So to cater to the specific needs of younger patrons, the library will have a dedicated area for teens and a separate area for the children's collection, offering age-appropriate resources and stimulating learning environments. The library will be equipped with a greater number of computer stations to meet the growing demand for digital access and resources. 2, all-user restrooms will be updated to ensure accessibility and comfort for all patrons. And the staff work area will be redesigned to include a private office, a general workroom, a break room, and a staff-only restroom, fostering a more conducive and efficient work environment. It is the belief of both library leadership and the St. John's Library design team that approving the conditional use and allowing the expansion of St. John's Library will significantly enhance its ability to serve the public effectively and efficiently. The new facilities will enable the library to offer a broader range of programs, services, and resources, ultimately benefiting the community as a whole. We appreciate your time and careful consideration of this request. Your support for the proposed expansion will go a long way in ensuring that St. John's Library continues to be a vibrant and essential community resource. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Thank you. And Ms. Gleick, did you have somebody else who wanted to speak on behalf of the applicant?
No, that concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I'll ask if there's any public testimony in support of the applicant's proposal. And it looks like no one has unmuted themselves. Is there any public testimony in opposition to the application? And I do not see any, so I don't think there's any need for any BDS rebuttal or response. So would the applicant like to make a closing statement?
The only thing that we would like to add is that this project is on an aggressive timeline, and so since there was no written comments or public testimony at the hearing today, we would like to encourage the hearings officer to close the record after the hearing so that we can move forward with our building permits as soon as possible. Thanks.
Waive their final argument period. And that was the nod yes. Thank you. So it looks like the record is going to close today, which means my decision is due no later than June 20th. And I think that's pretty much all I have. Does anybody have anything else before we conclude? Okay. This will conclude the hearing for today. Thank you and have a good day.